Welcome to Down to Herf, the podcast for cigar smokers, whiskey drinkers, and for the people just looking to kick back, light up, and have a good time. I'm your host, Jerry, and I'm joined by, as always, my co-host, Gio and Caleb. Fellas. This is episode 107 of the Down to Herf podcast. Good interview we just had, chilling out, nice bottle. Caleb, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm feeling good. That was a great episode, great interview. Wet my beak a little bit too much. I'm slurring my words. I might be a little drunk. Just kidding. I'm looking up a lot of stuff. I'm getting prepared. There's a lot of stuff going on.
What'd you think of the bottle?
Dude, bottle is a good drink, man.
Good drinker,
pick.
Right?
Great pick.
What'd you think of the bottle, Gio?
I really enjoyed it. You know, I liked it better than our pairing our last episode's pairing.
Really?
Yeah.
You like it better than the Hardens?
Yeah, I do. I'll be honest. I thought I was going to like that bottle, and I ended up being the only one that didn't like the bottle.
Personally, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to, but I can say, I think I can speak for the three of us in this room. This is a bottle smash. You could smash this thing.
Absolutely.
We'll obviously get into the specs of that in a little while, but Gio, what did we smoke tonight, brother?
All right. Well, before we get into that, as always, this episode is brought to you by our friends at Crown Heads. Got to be on the lookout for their latest releases. Newest one being the Mil Dias Maduro. You know, they got a ton of stuff in the pipeline. You know, Huber's been teasing that Las Cal 24, and there'll be plenty more announced in the next coming weeks. By the time this airs, we'll be probably a couple weeks from PCA, and I'm sure there will be plenty more to talk about by that time. Make sure you're smoking Crown Heads. They put out some great fucking products, man.
Don't drop your crowns, kings. Yeah. Make sure you're smoking Crown Heads.
Now, today, we are smoking. We're back with them here. The Black Label Trading Co. Morphine Robusto Torpedo Box Press. This cigar was, man, I got to say, we really enjoyed this one. I'll get into the specs of it. I don't think we really touched too much into it during the interview. So this is a 5x54. It's actually a Robusto, despite it being a Torpedo Vitola. Comes in a 20-count box. This is where we were right, actually, here. There was some confusion on it. So it's a dual wrapper. It is a San Andreas and an Ecuadorian Maduro wrapper. So this explains why we liked it as much as we did.
So I said the same thing. Gio was talking to me. He was like, Dude, I got like a almost like a barber pole to this, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And Gio had to walk up to me with his flashlight. I looked at it and I said, holy shit, there really is two wrappers on it. And I did not really expect that. Really cool cigar.
Yeah, I mean, this is a testament to, you know, what James is doing there, getting really, really crazy with his creations there. I'll read a little bit about it here. The binder and filler on this is both Nicaraguan. James talks about this later in the interview. Obviously, spoiler alert, we're talking to James from Black Label Trading Co. But it is Lajero tobacco in here, which
James Brown, the cigar blender.
Yes.
Not the artist.
Correct. R.I.P. So just to talk about this, the Robusto Torpedo Box Press is more unique than the other sizes. The Vitola is one they haven't used for quite some time, and with the dual wrapper leaf here. James is on record saying, I believe this year might be one of the best vintages so far. I'm most excited about bringing back one of my favorite Vitolas, the Box Press Torpedo. These were limited to just 800 boxes, so these came out the last quarter of 2023, so this will be, you know, eligible for our yearly Cigar of the Year list. And guys, if you can get your hands on one, they run $11.50 a stick. Really, really reasonable price. You can find them, get them. I got to say, really, really impressed with their LEs. And, you know, I could tell why James is excited for this one.
Great product. Obviously, Gio, I think you touched on it, but we're smoking our second one. Dude, this thing is a banger. This is a great cigar.
Wasn't expecting to, you know, I shouldn't say wasn't expecting to enjoy it, but every now and then you get a cigar that just, you know, comes out of nowhere for you, and you're like, wow, this is fantastic.
It's the right size, too.
Oh, dude, I could
see. It's the right size.
Great shape.
Yeah.
Great shape as well. Box press torpedo.
And I usually don't like torpedoes.
Right.
Or that, box press.
This literally did so many things right that it like blew our expectations out of the water in terms of like preference.
Sure. Definitely out of my comfort zone.
Well, I do enjoy a box press and a torpedo size. So this size-wise and shape worked well with me.
Caleb, we got into some cigar stuff. We paired this with a fantastic bottle.
This bottle also worked very well with me. This is a Four Roses single barrel, barrel strength, Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey out of Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. We are drinking this out of Warehouse TN, barrel number 212P. This is a 54.8% alcohol by volume. So that's a 109.6%. This is also aged 10 years and 3 months. So if you know anything about Four Roses, they got the specialty, their mash bills, the way they make it. This is an OESV, which means that this is on, this is on the sweeter side with a little bit of fruity fresh and caramel notes to it. We have mash bill E on this one. So this is the bright grains addition to that strain that they use. So the mash bill is 75% corn, 20% rye, 5% malted barley. So that's where you get a lot of the sweetness out of there. The caramel, the dried fruits, the delicate notes. So actually, this was a very easy sipper. Went down very well. Great pairing as well. Really enjoyed it. And for like 109 proof, you could barely tell.
What did you think of this bottle, man? Because every time I drink one of these Four Roses barrel strengths, it absolutely blows my mind. They're always so good.
Yeah, I haven't drank too many of the barrel strengths, but this one, they all taste different too. It doesn't matter. They got so each like the OSV, there's 10 different strains or blends that they use. So this is one of the sweeter ones.
And what is this, OESV?
OESV, yes.
OESV.
So this is one of the sweeter, more fruit-forward ones, but such a nice combination.
Such
this,
a hard bottle to find around here too.
What was the, maybe you might remember this. Like Jeff said, there's a specific Four Roses recipe that he's a big fan of. That
it's one of the 10.
Yeah,
I'm saying like barrel strength wise, it's one of the 10. Yeah, I don't know what the hell he said.
I remember him and obviously you might've paid attention more to that part of it, but
I feel like it might not be this.
Who knows, man?
I mean, I feel like Jeff is a big proof guy. If it ain't 130.
Yeah, this is on one of the lower proof ends out of all the 10 strains. But
yeah, what I've noticed with him is like he wants it to be high proof, but drink like low proof.
Yeah, I feel like that's what a lot of whiskey drinkers chase. I mean, it is what it is. I'm with it. I understand it.
Hey, we haven't done Four Roses in a while, so this is a great pick for today's pairing.
You're welcome, fellas.
I mean, I think the last time we did it is when we did the comparison.
Yeah, we did the small batch and small batch select.
That was a while ago. Ages ago. Season one.
Man. That episode's aged 2 years already.
Yeah.
That being said, obviously, we had a really awesome interview that we did tonight. And so, Gio, why don't we get right into that?
Without further ado, James Brown from Black Label Trading Co.
Let's get right into that interview.
All right. We got James, founder of Black Label Trading Co. Almost said co-founder there for it. But so, James, all right. Welcome to Down to Herf here, man. We've been trying to get you on for a minute here. Happy to finally get it set up here that the schedule worked out.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
So today we actually are going to be smoking your Morphine Robusto, the 10-year anniversary one, the box pressed.
Very nice.
Yeah. So
have you smoked that cigar before?
First time.
What was that? I've only smoked one other Black Label Trading Company cigar so far. It's kind of a new blend, and you know, I'm starting to dive into it a little bit more. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what we got here, man. You want to tell us a little about the cigar?
Yeah. I mean, the Morphine is kind of a cool cigar for us because it was our first limited release. First came out in 2014. So it's one of those cigars that's kind of been with us for the last 10 years, you know, a lot of different iterations of it. We normally put it out every year and normally we'll do 3 different Vitolas in it, but always a Lancero. So yeah, it's kind of one of those that's always been, like I said, it's been a favorite for people for a long time.
Which of the Vitolas is your favorite?
honestly, that that box press torpedo.
Yeah, it's definitely definitely a unique vitola to this thing. It kind of reminds me of like a shark in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of those cigars where, I mean, I always do love the Lancero in it, which is why we always do a Lancero. But yeah, out of all the vitolas we've done, I think that little Robusto smokes really well for that cigar.
All right. Well, we're definitely looking forward to smoking this. First question for you, I got. You guys kind of started doing cigars in what, 2013, but you were just kind of blending and doing cigars for friends, and just, you know, you had a love of cigars previous to actually starting your own factory in Nicaragua, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I was making cigars for other people and all that for about 3 years before we actually launched Black Label, which was in late 2012. So started selling product around early 2013.
So what made you want to do that, man? I mean, obviously there's a love of cigars, and then there's the crazy step of, I'm just going to go and I'm going to start my own company. Like, how did we get there? Like, I read that you were doing like crazy ATV tours and all kinds of stuff, and like, you know, in Africa and all over the world. I mean, how do you get to the cigar thing, man? That's quite a different road, I'd say.
Yeah, but I mean, I think my wife and I, we've always been the kind of people that just kind of go for things.
Sure.
You know, we've lived all over the world. I mean, we've owned numerous businesses over the last 20 years. And I get super into things, super passionate about things. And I was a sommelier before and worked in the wine industry. And the time that I was spending in Nicaragua, I was finding that I was kind of relating to tobacco in the same way that I did with wine. And I became very interested and passionate about the manufacturing side of cigars and seeing everything that went into that. And then what I found was the more time I was spending in Nicaragua and the tobacco that I was smoking in Nicaragua, there is a huge disconnect between what I loved about that tobacco and what I was finding in cigars available in the States. I felt like things were a little bit monotonous, and I was smoking things and kind of felt like I've smoked this, you know, 100 times before. And what I loved about the tobacco I was smoking in Nicaragua was kind of this bold intensity. You know, it was a little kind of gritty and rough around the edges and just had a lot of character to it. And so I just had this idea of, you know, wanting to learn everything I could about tobacco and blending cigars, and, you know, started experimenting with it and doing it. And like you said, we owned a travel company before this, and I started making cigars for our customers on our travel tours. They kind of fell in love with what I was doing. And so that kind of started the idea that maybe there's something here. Maybe people would be interested in kind of my perception of Nicaraguan cigars. And so, yeah, from that point, I just decided to start, you know, really small, really slowly. And here we are, you know, 10 years later. So,
killing it. So prior to all that, when you were like young, growing up, maybe in your teens, early 20s, is that maybe where your love for cigars started, or did it happen a little later on in life? What got you interested?
No, it did. It did. I mean, it's, my dad was a pipe smoker. And I always loved that growing up, you know, like the smell and kind of watching that process as well.
Those aromatics, man, and they can consume a room, yeah, man. I know that.
Yeah, for sure.
Always a great smell.
And, you know, as I got older, it wasn't something that I was into, but I always loved tobacco. I mean, I was a cigarette smoker for a long time. Had to quit that when I became a sommelier. And that's kind of when I started looking at cigars. And, you know, I started out like everybody else, not really knowing very much and kind of fiddling around. But then I ended up working at a restaurant in Tucson. And the owner of the restaurant also owned a chain of cigar stores and was super into it. So he kind of opened my eyes up to what, you know, cigars could be. So, I mean, I was smoking off and on, but then in my early 20s, that's really when I kind of got into cigars and, you know, kind of piqued my interest a lot more. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, my wife and I, like I said, we've kind of lived all over the world. And so it hasn't, cigars have never been something for me, you know, before we started the company that was like a 100% all the time part of my lifestyle. You know what I mean? Like I didn't have access to them. I still enjoyed them when I could. But you know, not being in the States, not living in the US, I didn't have a, you know, kind of a core group of guys that I hung out with smoking cigars. I didn't know any retailers. I didn't know anybody in the industry. So we kind of came at cigars from a very different approach. You know, most people that start a cigar brand have some kind of history, you know, around the cigar business in some way. Whereas we came at it really not knowing anything, in that side of things.
What kind of cigars did you smoke before you started blending your own stuff?
I kind of smoked through a lot of, you know, like I said, I mean, for a long time, it was just kind of whatever was available.
Sure.
Where I was in whatever part of the world. But, you know, and that was anything from, you know, legacy brands to when I had the time to go through a humidor somewhere in the States. You know, I was always checking out things like Tatuaje. You know, some of the DE stuff. I mean, I kind of ran through a lot of different brands, and at that point in time, really not knowing much about any of them.
Sure.
But you know, just kind of looking through to see, you know, what was interesting.
So yeah, I'm also a Tatuaje fan. That's one of my go-to brands for sure. I don't know. I just feel like my father in general puts out great products, and you know, I mean, that's right up my alley. So I don't know. I feel like a lot of people like those boutique-y style, you know, brands. Obviously, Black Label, sort of the same thing. You guys do a lot of limiteds, but you do also a lot of core line stuff.
Yeah, we do. I think we kind of set our business up in a way very early on to, you know, we knew pretty early on that people kind of always want something new, something different, you know, and you kind of have to keep that momentum going, you know, with cigar consumers. And so we try to do at least 6 limited releases a year. You know, and that can be anything from cigars that we have made in the past that are just coming back that are more like, you know, annual releases up to, you know, brand new cigars that, you know, we do for like PCA, things like that.
Sure. Do you have help when you blend, or do you just blend everything by yourself?
Yeah, I blend everything by myself.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
man.
I mean,
true work of art there.
And, you know, and it's for me talking about other brands and stuff too. I mean, it's at this point, I don't really smoke a lot of other cigars,
sure.
You know, because I want to be kind of very focused on what I'm doing. You know, I don't want to smoke something that's like super popular right now because I feel like that might influence my next decision on what we're making and what we're going to do. So I try to just kind of stay focused on what we do. And, you know, I'm always working on a lot of new projects every year.
What did you enjoy more, doing cigars or do you like doing wine more?
You know, I think it's a very different scenario for me because it's not like I owned a winery or, you know, was in the winemaking process, you know, but I was very passionate about it. So, I mean, I would say for me, definitely cigars, because not only can I be passionate about it, but I myself can be, you know, kind of the creative force behind it and put out things that I want, and, you know, developing products and all that is, that's my favorite part of what we do, you know?
So, yeah. I mean, to touch on that, like, I remember there was a quote for you in regards to, I'm pretty sure it was the royalty, like, line where you kind of said this was kind of like the first one I made that I liked. So is that kind of your approach now? You make cigars that you like and hope that, you know, they go forward with it? Or
yeah, I mean, I think it's always been our approach. I mean, basically, you know, when we launched in 2013, it was you know, we launched with 6 different lines, and because I wanted to give like a good variety of what we, you know, were able to do. But yeah, I mean, it's always just been about making cigars that I find really unique and interesting and putting them out in the sizes that I think they work the best in, you know, like with all of our stuff, we don't do a lot of Atolas, you know, we make the cigars and what we feel like they smoke best in and keep it very kind of simple and to the point. And, you know, I think the thing with our brand is it stands out as very authentic in that way. You know, we just, we make what we want to make and we make as much as we can make. And that's kind of it, you know.
What was it like deciding, hey, I'm going to start my own factory? And then when it came to, you know, light, and you finally saw it and you're like, wow, I can't believe I just did this. That had to be pretty crazy, huh?
It definitely was. I mean, you know, it was the factory side of things was definitely a massive undertaking that we took on, you know, very early in our business. And, you know, it wasn't the most convenient time to go through all that, but it definitely was the right thing to do for us because, you know, it allowed us to have that freedom, you know, of creativity, of being able to make the cigars that we wanted to make in the way that we wanted to make them. And really, we found that, you know, working with someone else, that was just impossible. So doing the factory was definitely the right step at the right time. And it, you know, it was super, like you said, like it was kind of a surreal moment. It was super cool. And, you know, I mean, it was, you know, a huge next step. And I think it really propelled us forward in what we did.
Well, when you look online, your factory looks amazing. It looks huge, by the way, especially like your storehouse, wherever you got all those leaves. And it looks like you have just rows and rows of dried tobacco, all different shaped leaves, colors, because I see a lot of Candela in there as well. Because I've seen some of those blends and those wrappers. You guys do some crazy work, who's ever rolling those. That can't be easy.
No, definitely not, you know, and I mean, that's kind of like what I was saying, you know, when you look at a lot of the stuff we do, especially for the Blackwork Studio stuff, that's where we kind of really get very expressive with the, you know, artisanal qualities of cigar making. You know, we do a lot of really creative stuff with, you know, the linear caps, the multi wrappers, the closed foot, like all that stuff. It's fun, you know, for me to come up with cool and interesting stuff like that. And, you know, the factory gives us freedom to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be awesome having, you know, basically you get to be the chef with all the ingredients you know, obviously some of these brands go through a factory and they're limited to what they provide for them. So like this year it's like, hey, all right, I want some of this. Let's figure out what the hell I can make.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's something that really defines our brand. It really makes our brand stand out kind of in the sea of, you know, boutique lines that are out there. You know, I think that one of the issues you run into with, you know, with some of these brands is like, you know, if you're a small brand, but you're being manufactured at a large manufacturer, what differentiates your product from, you know, the mass produced stuff that's coming out of there, you know, like, whereas I can dictate exactly what our product is, what it's about, where the tobacco comes from, why we use it. So I think that aspect of having our own factory really kind of puts us a notch up in terms of our ability to, you know, be creative and do exactly what we want to do.
So I want to talk on the name Oveja Negra, Black Sheep. Yeah. Where did that come from?
Yeah. You know, I think that we just have kind of always felt that way, especially in this industry. You know, when we first started and we moved to Nicaragua, I mean, we were literally like, you know, the only gringos living in SLE, you know, I mean, you know, so we kind of stuck out for sure, you know, and in the branding, everything we do, you know, I mean, especially with the factory, the feel of the factory very much reflects the branding and the style of what we do. So it just kind of made sense. You know, we're definitely not the norm. We're not what you see typically anywhere in Nicaragua. And so, yeah, the name just kind of came from that.
I like your style. You got a lot of gothic, the skulls, the a couple of nuns, the praying hands, everything you do. It looks really cool. It, you know, makes great brand wear no matter what, hats, T-shirts. It just looks like the band could fit anywhere. It always stands out on a shelf, on a box.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is that all your design or you got someone doing that for you?
No, I do all the artwork as well.
So. You draw this shit too? You an artist?
Yeah.
Damn. Wow. My man just has you got all the talents and that ATV tours, wine palette, a palette for wine and tobacco. Shit. I smoke this shit just to fucking hang out.
Let's be clear though. There were not ATV tours. They were Land Rover tours.
Okay, sorry. Okay, gotta refresh that. Sorry. Get it right.
Can you tell how like outdoorsy we are? Maybe I should take a couple of those, and I would know the difference between a snowmobile and a Polaris Razor.
Yeah,
I took like a paddleboarding tour when I was out in the Virgin Islands. You know, paddleboarding and scuba diving.
Yeah, no,
it wasn't didn't go that extreme where I was riding around on motorcycles or anything like that. But
see, they got the fancy stories. I took a cab when I went in to see family in Puerto Rico. That's what I got.
So, you lived in Tucson. Are you a skier or a snowboarder? You do any of that stuff?
No, I was a huge skateboarder back in the day, but no, in my my adult life, I kind of let all that go.
I did the skateboarding thing back in the day.
I tried it.
I sucked. Like an ollie was like, if I got it, I was like, yes, this is a fucking big day right here.
Only an ollie and a kickflip. That was about it.
Yeah.
Tried it.
How good were you?
I was fairly good. Yeah. I was actually really good. And
you like a street skater or did you like the parks better?
Yeah, it's no street. Yeah.
Break any bones?
Yeah, I lots of stuff.
You ever end up on Scarred? You remember that shit? What the fuck was that guy's name? He was the Papa Roach's lead singer. What the hell was his name?
Didn't he just die recently too?
No, come on.
Or no, that's the guy from like
I'm Lost.
All-Star, right?
Yeah, that was
I'm lost on that combo.
That's Smash Mouth.
Yeah, you're thinking of Smash Mouth. Mix it up there.
We're talking about totally different bands here.
What does Gio know about skateboarding? He's a Puerto Rican kid.
No, Papa Roach. Yeah, exactly. Their lead singer was like the host of that show. Weird shit, man. But that's cool, man. I see all the skateboarding shoes behind you. I know I mentioned it before we actually started the show. What's that all about, man? Because there's got to be at least 50, 60 pairs of shoes just sitting behind you. Do you wear those things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just like, that's a very small.
Holy shit, dude. Look like a fucking Foot Locker stock room.
I was going to say, I got your Instagram pulled up.
There's the same thing
crazy.
On the other side, too.
Big sneaker.
So, yeah, I have about 800 square feet dedicated to sneakers. So,
damn.
Oh, wow.
They look like a lot of the Nike ones. Skate shoes.
What was it?
Yeah, I have a lot of SBs. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely a passion for sure.
James, you remember the old school Vans? You put them on. They were so fucking big. You remember how big they were?
Horrible. Yeah.
Horrible. Yeah. Horrible sneakers. I wore them. I was confused. I Yeah, I don't know. DC, Etnies, all that shit back in the day.
Listening to rap at the same time.
Yeah, I was confused. Place. I didn't know what I was. Studded belt, but I wore Abercrombie and Fitch. Made no sense.
So what's the most you spent on a pair of sneakers? Because I know sneakerheads, they get up there.
Like $7,000.
$7,000? What the fuck, man? That's wild.
Those got to be like framed up in a glass case.
Are those out of a box?
What's that?
Are they out of a box? Or are they just sitting on a shelf like that?
No, they're down here on the shelf. Yeah.
Bottom shelf, $7,000 shoe.
Damn.
Dude, that's crazy, man.
Do you have a wine collection like that?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
I do, actually.
You got a nice wine cellar?
No, I have just fridges, you know. Yeah. Where I live, it's not really cellar temperature or anything like that. So you got to rely on having good fridges.
Sure. Nice wine adore. What do you think you have more of, wine or sneakers?
Sneakers for sure.
That's fucking crazy, dude. I know a sneakerhead, man, and I don't even think. And I think he's deep into it. I thought he was deep into it. And I'm looking at this, man. This is wild.
Speaking of wine and pairings and all with cigars, what are you currently pairing your cigar with? Or is it just the coffee?
Me?
Yeah. Is it just the coffee?
I'm just having a coffee right now. But yeah, I mean, it just depends for me. Like, I don't drink outside of wine, so I don't do like bourbons or spirits or anything. So wine's always a go-to for me, even though I don't think it necessarily is a great pairing for cigars. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like I'll just have like a soda most of the time, and you know, the sugar kind of reinvigorates your palate. So when I'm actually tasting tobacco or smoking something and I really want to get into it, I'll have something with some sweetness to it. It definitely helps kind of open up your palate to what you're tasting.
Oh yeah, Dr. Pepper always hits nice with the cigar, that's for sure. Yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I lost video for some reason. This computer decided to restart randomly. Okay. But
not a big deal. He can still hear you.
So here's a good, right? You're someone then who's got a much, much more refined palate in cigars and wine and all this thing. All right, someone like me who I'm at the level of I really like it or it's not quite for me. What's something that I can do to actually get better at tasting the intended notes of a cigar? Because I would love to actually be able to appreciate, you know, when someone is saying, this is what I was trying to put forth with this, you know, whether it's something as simple as making a Sumatra wrapper shine or, you know, that's just the simplest level for me. Like,
well, do you retrohale?
I attempt it, but I don't know if I'm very,
I mean, I always say, like, if you're not actively retrohaling a cigar, I mean, you're honestly just smoking half the cigar, right? You're getting half the experience because, you know, we actually taste more with our nose than we do with our mouth. So you're going to really open up a lot of flavors that are there if you are actively retrohaling the cigar. I would also say that, like, instead of focusing so much on taste and flavor, like, you should also think about, like, how the cigar affects your palate. You know, if there is spice, like, where does the spice hit? Is it the tip of your tongue? Is it the sides of your tongue? Is it the roof of your mouth? You know, does the cigar make you salivate or does it dry on your palate? Like, there's a lot of different things that come into play with tobacco and how it affects your palate. So I would say not everybody is really going to be able to get super nerdy about flavor profiles and things like that. But, you know, you can kind of just see the differences between cigars and the way it affects your palate. Start retrohaling. That's definitely going to change things up. And, you know, cigars are very subjective to, you know, whatever you ate, whatever you drank. All of these things are going to affect your palate in different ways. So, you know, like I said, sugar is a great thing that helps keep your palate awake and going. So I would try to avoid things with very high acidity levels. That's really going to kind of zap your palate. Things like, you know, wine is one of those things. Coffee, you know, things with strong bitter notes are definitely going to affect your palate in a certain way. So, I mean, really, it's just kind of, you know, just getting to know your palate and what works and what doesn't, you know. But I would just say, like, sit down with like three different drinks in front of you as you smoke a cigar, and you'll definitely be able to tell the difference from one thing to the next on how the cigar tastes and what it tastes better with and what you can taste more with, you know, what intensifies the cigar flavors.
I mean, I definitely, that makes sense. I've been inadvertently doing that, you know, almost every episode I have, obviously, my glass of whatever bourbon we're drinking and, you know, some form of energy drink here. So that's where I get the little bit of sugar side. So
I don't know if C4 exactly counts as a good pairing, but
there's sugar in it somewhere. It's artificial sweetener, but,
you know, in terms of spirits, like, I think a lot of really, kind of well-aged rums out there have that nice sweetness on the finish that really make a huge difference. There's definitely some bourbons and stuff out there that have, you know, more of a softer, sweeter note to them as well. But anything like that, I think you're going to get a better smoking experience than you are with something that's, you know, going to be, like I said, kind of bitter or acidic or anything like that is really going to kind of diminish the way the smoke reacts with your palate.
Okay. Because, yeah, one thing, like, the, so we got turned on to your brand by a listener who, like, really stand out for you guys. Like, it was like, you got to try. So the first thing, like, I smoked from you guys was the Royalty line. And I don't know enough to say what it tasted like, but I know when I taste a cigar that just stands out in a different flavor profile for me. And that was a pretty unanimous thing from all of us that when we were smoking it, you know, it just had a different, mouthfeel, I guess, like, not that's it, and you just really appreciated it. So I was just wondering, basically, if they'll, I'll take those tips to heart for when I try some other of your stuff here.
What is the actual blend of this morphine?
So the morphine is going to be, it's a 3-Lajero blend. Now, when I say that, it's not necessarily, we don't, you know, a lot of our cigars are multiple Lajero blends, but we don't necessarily use like one whole leaf of each one of those Lajeros. So the issue that we face a lot with what we do when you're making cigars that tend to be a bit bigger, bolder, higher nicotine content is, you know, functionality, right? So when you're using a lot of heavy tobaccos with multiple Lajeros, Visos, they don't like to burn. So for us, we have to be very conscientious of, you know, making sure that our fillers are set up in a way that you're going to have the right burn rate, you know, because we also use a lot of Viso and Lajero cut wrappers. So the morphine is going to actually be a Lajero cut Mexican San Andreas wrapper. It's a little thicker, a little heavier. So yeah, it's a cigar that we made intentionally to be strong. And at that time in 2014, when we put it out, it was the strongest cigar that we made. We've definitely surpassed that over the years, but that's where the name came from and the whole idea behind it. So yeah, but it's a 3-Lajero blend made up also with a Viso and a Seco as well.
Cool. So heading back to that, the retrohale, I am not good at that. So do you have any tips on how to do like a proper retrohale? Because like I almost threw up once on the show trying to do it.
You know, I think it's just something that you just have to keep practicing. Okay. You know? And it's like, for example, my wife for years refused and she's been just kind of trying. And now, I mean, she's retrohaling like all the time, like every cigar she smokes. So it's just kind of a trial and error thing. I mean, I would just say start out by exhaling like the majority of the smoke that you drew in. And just that final little bit, you just kind of move it, try to move it to the back of your throat and out through the nose, you know. But it's one of those things where you got to build up to like a full retro.
All right.
Because you can definitely make yourself sick.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you see me almost like gag or puke, that's probably doing a retrohale wrong. But it might happen.
I think you should only retrohale. I think that would be fantastic to see.
There it is.
I can't do it.
He's fucking shot.
I tried. I need a drink now. Where's my water at? Yeah. I tried, but I you know what? I can still pick up a lot of notes because like cold draw, I had a lot of chocolate on here, and then I'm getting to the halfway point, and the chocolate's turning a little more peppery, but you still get a lot of chocolate in there for me. So far, smoking good. Really good smell around here, too. Just getting lots of chocolate. Now yeah, I'm getting into that pepper.
Yeah, so what I would say is like that what you're getting on your palate, right? You're getting kind of that earthy, chocolatey, rich note that it has. So what you're missing out on is on the retrohale for that cigar is where the big spice component comes through. So there is a great spice component as well. It just doesn't come through as much on the palate as it does on the retro.
See, on this cigar, I mean, I actually am probably the only one here that does retrohale my cigars for the most part. I definitely get that spice, but it's not like this overbearing, like heavy spice. It's like it's an enjoyable spice. It doesn't like absolutely destroy your sinus. Like, you know, you've smoked a real spicy cigar. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, and I would say that I think that one thing about our brand too is, you know, a lot of people will hear about it or they'll look at the branding and they have this idea that the cigars might be kind of over the top, you know, but I really believe that nothing we make is really that over the top. You know, we really strive for balance more than anything, complexity. So, you know, even though we make more full flavor, full strength cigars, we never make a cigar for the sake of strength, right? Like flavor wins every time. And I would say that, you know, most of our stuff is going to be, it could be full, you know, for some people, but I mean, I think for people that smoke on a consistent basis, you know, we're definitely not over the top in any way.
I'll say, I don't think this morphine's like, you know, super strong, at least not to me. So far, well, I guess we'll see when we get to the final
unless he
third.
Retrohales it. Yeah. Then he's going to fall out of his fucking chair.
Yeah, you might see me run.
James, if you see Caleb throwing up, it's just him.
It's been known to happen a few times.
I think that has more to do with the booze.
Well, and you guys made me do the hot chip challenge too, so.
Yeah.
I'm not a spicy guy, James.
Gringo. No spice.
No, I can handle it on foods, just not like the Pocky Chip challenge. I can't do that.
You like spicy stuff? You a spicy guy?
I mean, I think I used to be. I'm definitely not really anymore. But yeah, I don't know.
I feel like
not
I have this heartburn.
I would gravitate towards. Yeah.
I feel like I get heartburn all the time now. I think it's something I got to get the fuck away from.
This guy douses lunch in a bottle of hot sauce. Don't let him fool you.
Trying to get away from that, though. I'm killing my palate.
Yeah, exactly.
Destroying it. But yeah. Anyway.
All right, James, so about the other brands that you have. So how did Blackwork Studio, and then you have, I see, Descent and Emilio. So how did those come under the label as well with you guys?
So yeah, we started with Black Label, like I said, in 2013. Then when we opened the factory, I had, I kind of had a lot of ideas for new cigars and kind of some different styles. And I didn't really think they necessarily fit in the Black Label portfolio. So I decided to start a new brand, Blackwork Studios. And kind of as the name indicates, it's, you know, the idea behind it was that we treat our factory very much like a studio space, right? It's all about being creative and being experimental and trying new things. And so Blackworks just kind of grew out of that, that idea, that concept. And like I said, you know, the Blackwork cigars, things like Killer Bee, the Hornet, the Tiger series that we do, they're all very focused on kind of those artisanal qualities that they have. And so kind of how I would explain the differences, Black Label would be kind of more of our mainstream brand, where we kind of have, you know, for the most part, something for everybody. Whereas Blackworks is going to be the brand that's kind of geared more towards like the hardcore cigar nerds, you know, especially in terms of like Vitola sizes, things like that. Everything in Blackworks tend to be much smaller ring gauges, you know, things like Petite Coronas and Corona Largas. And so it's just a different style for us. And, you know, so that's kind of how that started with the two of those brands. And then when we took on our distribution deal, the owner of our distribution company is also the owner of Emilio Cigars. And so Emilio is a brand that's been around for a really long time. But it's also been a brand that really didn't have any kind of like character definition behind it or what it was. And a lot of it didn't make a lot of sense. And so at that time, we decided to take Emilio kind of in-house with us and kind of redevelop it, rebrand it, redid all of the cigars. So that was a really cool project, you know, for us. And I would say that the thing with Emilio is it's definitely going to be kind of more medium bodied in terms of, you know, strength and profile. So it's going to be kind of that something for everybody line. And so, yeah, it's been a few years since we've had it and started redeveloping it. And we're adding new stuff every year and it's really started to grow. Dissident is a line that is a completely separate brand that we just manufacture and distribute. So,
okay. I'd like to go back into the Blackwork side of things. So you like me, I'm a Corona guy all day. Like if you see it, I'm probably buying the Corona size. It's my favorite thing to smoke just because they smoke a lot easier and quicker for like normally speaking here. And given mine and Jerry's line of work, we're usually have to put our cigars down a lot, unfortunately. And, yeah. So what's the while this project kind of you experimented with as far as Blackworks that was, you know, pretty successful with it? And then what was one that you're like, oh, man, this just did not turn out the way I wanted it to?
You know, honestly, like, I don't know that we've really had too many misses, to be honest. Like, I mean, we don't really put anything out unless it's something we're super stoked about. And, you know, a lot of the Blackwork stuff actually starts out as like a factory exclusive that you can only get if you come to the factory in Nicaragua. And we'll run it that way for a few years, like the Tiger series, and then we'll release it to the public eventually. But I would say the coolest thing for me is, you know, when we launched Blackworks, we launched it with Killer Bee, the Hornet, and MBK. And at that time, we only made Killer Bee in one size, which was a 4.5 by 46 Petit Corona. And that, you know, still to this day is our number one selling cigar. So I think we're probably one of the only manufacturers in the market that has a Petit Corona as their number one selling SKU. You know, so I think that for me was super cool that we were able to do that.
Well, I mean, sounds like I got to get my hands in some Killer Bees then, because that size is perfect. Like, I don't know how much you know about me and Jerry, but so we're like local police officers here. So that's why they get set down a lot, unfortunately. So, yeah.
We try to be work smokers, but unfortunately, you know, one second you be sitting there shooting the shit, hanging out and really enjoying yourself. And then the next you're, you know, doing something that you're like,
yeah,
I got to go. Like, we have to go. It happens fast. There's no worse feeling in the world than having to ditch your cigar.
Yeah, for sure.
Or having to relight it. And, you know, that's, I don't know. It's not something I like to do. But
so, speaking on Blackworks with the Rorschach, did you get that idea from the Watchmen or just from the Rorschach, the things that they have you do in like a psychology meeting or something like that?
You know, it started with the psychology test, and then it was kind of, you know, everybody kept mentioning the Watchmen, and I actually hadn't even seen it.
It's so awesome.
It was kind of cool to see the tie in there for sure.
Oh, yeah, because it fits his mask and you got the white and the black. It looks perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's another really cool cigar that we do. You know, I mean, we do that in a 4.5 by 48 short Robusto. We also do it in a little petite Panatella, which is not a size you see very often. So, but yeah, we try to do kind of cool, interesting, unique Vitolas with Blackworks.
And then, yeah, we mentioned all those, the wrappers that you have with the Candela, because just looking on the IG page, man, just all that stuff out there looks really neat and cool. Are you a big fan of using Candela in a wrapper?
I mean, I am. Yeah, it's, you know, Candela is one of those things for most people that's usually like a love or hate type thing. I happen to love it, but I think it is, it's all in the way that you use it, right? So, like, you know, we don't do a lot of full Candela cigars. What we do is we use it as almost like an accent to the cigar. But we use it in a way where it kind of is always, it's still there. You get that Candela note, but it's definitely not dominant or overpowering the cigar, you know? So it's all about balance.
So I'm that Candela hater, just so you know, but I'm also with you. I like, if it's in there, you know, you're adding it, it's a barber pole, it's in there somehow, I can smoke that and really enjoy it. But, if we're talking about like a Luzion, you know, 8/8 or whatever, there's no way I'm going out of my way to buy that cigar. I don't know if it's just because it's green and they look funny. I don't know if it's the taste. There's just something about Candela that I just don't enjoy. I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very dominant tobacco. Like, even in very small doses, you're going to know it's there. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to sit down and smoke a Candela cigar, you're smoking a Candela cigar. Like, that's what the cigar is all about, you know? So if you're into that, cool. If you're not, then yeah, you're definitely not going to be into it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give you props on that, because you're one of the few brands I've seen like actually undertake integrating it, like in the way you've done, as those like those crazy barber poles. The only like comparable I've seen is like the Roma craft packs and like, you know, those filthy hooligans that come around for Paddy's Day every year. But, you know, that's, I feel more, in my opinion, gimmicky for the holiday. But like, it's definitely a difficult recipe to master. So I'm sure you seem like the mad scientist type with that stuff. So it was a challenge you probably welcomed, is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, in my first kind of go at Candela was I made a cigar called the Neon Tiger that started as kind of my personal cigar that I would smoke at the factory, and that kind of graduated into a factory exclusive where people can buy it, and now we do it as an event-only cigar for Blackworks. But the idea behind it was I wanted to make a cigar that you could smoke blindfold and you wouldn't necessarily pick it out as a Candela cigar. So it is, you know, a cigar with the linear multiple caps. The predominant wrapper is Candela, but the filler components, the way that we did it, it really, it doesn't over dominate the cigar itself. So the Candela still, even though it's the primary wrapper, is kind of like a side note. You know, it's there, but it's not just overpowering everything. Everything's very balanced in that cigar. Great spice component to it. It's very bright, very clean, and so it works well with Candela.
Sounds like we got to get Jerry to try it here.
I'll give it a whirl.
Yeah, worth a try.
I'll give it a whirl. No doubt I'll give it a whirl. Speaking on, you know, just things you smoke around the factory, I got to imagine you have, you know, an entire factory as your playground. There's got to be things that you just roll that, you know, aren't regular production stuff. You find yourself constantly experimenting with things as you're going through your daily routines?
I mean, you know, honestly, it's, we're always like right now I'm working on cigars for 2025, 2026, right? So
sure.
I am always like smoking new stuff, but it's mostly towards like production stuff, you know? Like I said, like the Neon Tiger kind of started out like in what you're describing for me. And so there's been a few things over the years, but I would say as of right now, like what I'm smoking all the time is either going to be like, you know, like right now we have our PCA stuff ready to come out. So I'm smoking through that constantly, making sure it's where it needs to be. Everything's good with it. And then I'm working on like the future project stuff, you know, smoking through that, seeing where it's at, what we want to do. So
do you guys have any PCA exclusive you're releasing this year?
Yeah, we have two actually. So one for Blackworks and one for Black Label.
Yeah, we'll be there in March, so we'll have to stop over and cool. Say what's up.
Definitely.
As far as that goes,
I wanted to ask. So I see you got a lot of tattoos and everything like that. So do any of your tattoos play off any of the artwork that you use for the cigars and the bands and labeling? Or is that completely different? No, completely different?
No, man. I think it's almost like, you know, you never want to tattoo your LLC, man. It's just like a curse, right? Like, it's just, yeah.
Trust me, no, I got a bad tattooer too.
Yeah, so for me, it's like I would love to, but I feel like it's like a kind of like a jinx thing. Like you don't want to do that.
You don't want to be worrying about getting rid of it someday.
Yeah,
that would suck.
Or you get rid of it and it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Caleb has a shit ton of tattoos too. I mean, it's hard to tell right now, but he's our ink guy for sure.
Yeah, he has actually.
But I will say it's super cool the amount of people that have actually gotten the artwork tattooed on them over the years. Like, so that's pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, I mean, you guys definitely have your like cult following in that regard. Like, I mean, that's got to be pretty crazy knowing that you've built something that, you know, people appreciate so much that, you know, your LEs are, you know, difficult to come by. Like even when, you know, we were talking with Angela trying to figure out what to set up here and, you know, getting the hands on these morphines, you know, we found a shop that was able to get them. So, I mean, that's got to be pretty awesome.
It is cool. Yeah, man. I mean, it's for me, it's super humbling, you know, like I would say as a cigar maker, you know, kind of your ideal scenario is like, you just want to be in somebody's rotation, right? Like, if somebody's going to smoke three or four, maybe five brands, you just hope to be one of them. But I would say over the years, it's been absolutely, you know, awesome to see like how many people just smoke Oveja Negra exclusively. You know what I mean? Like we have such a huge following of people that just are, they're just all about Oveja. Like that's it. They don't veer. They don't stray to anything else. That just they're on it. So, I mean, that's, you know, like I said, super humbling to me and awesome that, you know, people have, you know, it's a good feeling as somebody that creates something where, especially with cigars, you know, people find their thing, right? And it kind of changes them. Like, it's like, okay, I finally found like my cigar or my brand. And that's really awesome to see that change in people when they do find it.
I kind of feel like that is almost very similar to like the podcasting, you know, obviously doing like cigar media and stuff and talking to all you guys. It's always nice and humbling to hear people say, yeah, I love to listen to you guys talk. It's a good conversation. You guys always have good guests on, and you know, I really just like the flow of how things go. So, I got to imagine, you know, being an actual brand owner and, you know, somebody that blends these products for these people, you know, to hear them say, yeah, this is the fucking one. This is what I really love. So I can totally understand that, but that's gotta be like on steroids, you know, being the person that actually does it rather than like the person that covers it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's super cool and I love it. And I love getting out there. You know, I mean, even 10 years later, I'm still on the road a ton, because I want to see our retailers. I want to see our customers and go out there and do events and all that. So yeah, I mean, getting that feedback from people and talking to them and, you know, okay, you know, this is the cigar that, you know, opened my eyes to your brand and kind of changed everything for me. And now I smoke this, this, and this. Like, I love hearing all of that. It's great.
So if you had to make a suggestion to somebody, obviously, that had never smoked any kind of Aveja products, what would you say would be like a good entry-level cigar to the brand?
I would say for Black Label, I would say a great entry-level, just to see what we're about, for sure would be the Last Rites. I mean, I think Last Rites is the first cigar that I blended for myself as kind of what I wanted out of a cigar. So it's kind of, you know, very near and dear to me. But I think when you look at the line, the Last Rites kind of defines what Black Label is in one cigar. I mean, that's really what we strive for. And that's kind of the personality of the brand. It's all wrapped up into that cigar. For Black Works, I would definitely say the Killer Bee. You know, that's the cigar for Black Works that really kind of put us on the map. And, you know, for me, even 10 years later, I smoke probably 4 Killer Bees a day still. It's still a cigar that I'm drawn to and I want it all the time. So I would definitely say check that out.
Cool.
I think we need to check that one out.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
We got to get you got to get some more retailers up in Buffalo, man. Like, there's only a handful up here that, you know, carry you guys. It's tough, but, you know.
Yeah, because we tried to find you guys here in our local brick and mortars, and I don't think any of them had it. I don't even know where we ended up finding these.
Carl's spot has them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was the closest one. I mean, obviously, they're a little bit of a
hike. Is that where you went?
That was where I got the royalties, yeah. Mm.
Well, if you're ever in New York, James, you know, stop on by the studio. If you're ever doing events up here, I don't know how if you ever get up to New York, but, you know, we're out in Buffalo.
Yeah, I need to, you know, I go to New York City probably, I think I went like 4 times last year. I'm headed there next week, but I need to get north because we do have actually a couple of like the most old school Black Label fan guys are both from up there. They're huge supporters. They come to Nicaragua. They come to all the events in the Northeast. So I do need to get up there and see those guys for sure at some point.
Shout them out if you want, man.
Yeah, a guy named Kyle Kunicek and Michael Salento. So those guys have been, like I said, massive supporters of us, and it's been great. And, you know, that once again, that's the type of thing where if I'm doing events up in the East Coast, even if it's like, you know, Philly or Jersey or whatever, you know, Michael Salento lives very close to Buffalo, and, you know, he's in the car coming out, going to the events and supporting, and, you know, stuff like that is just means the world. It's awesome. So
yeah, man. Like Gio said, we have the one shop. I didn't even know that they had it there.
Yeah, your guys LEs obviously move pretty quickly, so like I've tried to find some of them there. Like, even these, like, there were only 800 boxes of the morphines, and so that's why I had to go West Coast to get them shipped. But
West Coast?
Yeah. And, I mean, the product, obviously, sales speak for themselves, man. If your stuff's selling out like that, I have to go to my like fifth, sixth options, and we got some good ones, you know, you should be very proud of what you're putting out, because the market determines what's good, truthfully. And, you know, I appreciate it, because this is something that wasn't on our radar, you know, at all. And so far, you know, I've been very, very impressed with both the cigars I've had from your brand.
Thank you. Cool. Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of cool for me to watch, too, is, you know, like you said, our limiteds, they are, you know, they are really limited, and they do sell out really fast. So it is kind of cool to watch the guys that, like, you know, are always trying to hunt down stuff. And, you know, we run our own Black Label Facebook group, and, you know, a lot of the guys in there are posting up, you know, all these, like, looking for this, looking for that, and everybody's like super helpful, trying to, you know, help people find what they want and what they're looking for. And so that side of it's really cool to see too, man. It's like, you know, somebody fell in love with a cigar that came out however many years ago, and they're still able to like find it through all these different people and sources. So
I feel like the word the hunt really is the reason that Gio and I really got into cigars in general. You know, we would smoke our cigars and hang out, and, you know, it wasn't like a passion project by any means, or, you know, we're not like, yeah, we're smoking like maybe one or two cigars a week at this point. Now, I mean, I'm smoking like 2, 3, 4 cigars a day. But the hunt is like when somebody tells you, oh, you can't find that cigar, that there's no way you're going to find that. And then you find it somewhere, you're calling all over the country, you're reaching out to people that smoke cigars. Hey, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And then you find the stuff. And that's kind of, especially in like the smaller boutique-y blends, that's the fun part. Sometimes it is fun hunting the stuff down.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, and it's like that with a lot of things. A lot of guys are like that with bourbons. I mean, I'm like that with sneakers. So, I mean, yeah, it is like a really cool side of it, you know.
Bourbon, especially, it's another one for me.
Yeah,
I'm always hunting bourbon, trying to find it at MSRP. You know, that's the hard part. You know, obviously, cigars have a secondary market, you know, especially on these limited products. Shit's a pain in the ass sometimes, man. Bourbon's just as bad, if not worse.
Oh, man, sneakers. I can just tell the dude's paying 7 racks for shoes. He knows what we're talking about, that pain. But when you want them, you'll pay it.
Capitalism at its finest.
Yeah. But we got a little bond here. Like, the whole hunt started with Tat, too. So that's just a little funny hearing that. So I got some, you know, appreciation there, too.
Well, I like what you said. You want to influence people to get your cigars in their wheelhouse. And I feel like when we have guests like you come on, and I start smoking, it's like, man, I'm slowly adding more into my wheelhouse, and I don't know if it's ever going to end.
That's the thing. There's so many. I'm sure you can attest to this. There's a lot of good cigars out there. It's almost hard to find bad cigars these days. To incorporate new brands into your portfolios and you know, bring them into what you're looking for and what you're chasing. And, you know, like those guys that really support you that you talk about. I mean, them are the guys, man. Them are the ones. Just like you said, even if it's 5 brands they smoke and one of them's yours, that's important, man.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think it's good because, you know, for people like me, you're right. Right. Like, so the competition nowadays is fierce, right? It's probably more fierce than it's ever been, you know, because like you said, like everybody's putting out a good product. So it keeps, you know, brands like mine, cigar like makers like me, I mean, we have to be, you know, putting out the best possible product, right? And you have to be doing things that are new and unique and interesting and, you know, holding people's attention. So I think from a consumer standpoint, it's a great time to be a cigar smoker, you know, because there are options out there. And like you said, like, you know, you're going to find your thing and you're not going to find a lot of, you know, terrible cigars.
For sure. I mean, I'm a cigar collector as well. I mean, it's almost like a ridiculous hobby. My wife, you're lucky you have a wife that, you know, supports the cigar game. My wife, not so much. It's more like, are you seriously about to buy another three boxes of cigars? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You don't even smoke the ones you have. I could never smoke all the cigars I have in my lifetime.
But you got them.
But I have them, though, and that's what's important. Whether they sit in the sealed box for my entire life, I still got them, though. Maybe that guy down the line, you know, that dude chasing that cigar.
I'll hit you up.
I'll be the guy that gives him that cigar that he's chasing around.
Yeah.
It's an interesting community.
But I mean, you know, it is. But, you know, I tell people all the time, man, I'm like, if you smoke that cigar and you love it enough to buy a box or two boxes or whatever, then just fucking smoke it, because it's not, when you go back to it in 2 years or whatever, it's not going to be what you want it to be. It's not going to be that cigar. You know what I mean? So even guys that like to age their cigars or whatever, I always tell them, like, just keep going back to it. And when you smoke it and it's exactly what you want it to be, then just burn them all.
They rip through the box.
Yeah. They're meant to be smoked.
I mean, just,
you know,
I mean, at the end of the day, then it's just like, you know, what is it? It's a cigar, man. You got to smoke it.
You're the second manufacturer owner to say that. Huber is just like this with Crown Heads. Like, we have a pretty good relationship with them. And you know, obviously certain guys like to hold on to like a box of this, a box of that. And he's like, nah, I smoked all this. Like, he's like, I got lucky. I wanted a picture of all of this. And like, you know, I sent him stuff that I had of his from back in the day. And he was like, oh man, thanks. I've been looking for this. So it's just funny. Like, the person who's making it is telling you, nah, smoke that shit.
Yeah, man. I don't have anything old. Like, and for me, for my taste, I like young tobacco, right? Like I like a bold, big, intense cigar. So when our cigars come out, that's when I think they're ready to be smoked, right? So I smoke through everything really quickly. And, you know, it's funny at like certain events and stuff like that, like some of these guys will come up to me and, I mean, it's really awesome. They want to hand me like a last rites from like 2013 or whatever that they've held on to, you know, and I'm just like, that's really nice, man, but you should just smoke it because you're going to appreciate it way more than I am, just because that's just not my thing, is like, you know, aged cigars. So, but yeah, I burn through everything. I don't have anything. Like, all of our limiteds, I smoke through them. They're gone. I don't keep anything at all.
Do you have any cigars you wish you would have held on to, though?
I don't think so, because I know, I mean, it's just the reality of how a cigar works, right? Like, so once that cigar is, you know, once the fermentation process is done with that tobacco, it's in a constant state of breaking down, right? Like, it's like when a leaf falls in your yard and it goes from, you know, green to yellow to brown and eventually disappears. You know, tobacco is undergoing that same process as it sits. You know, the oil content in that leaf is constantly breaking down. And as the oil content breaks down, you're going to lose, you know, spice, flavor, intensity, nicotine. And so for me, those are all the things that I love about a cigar. I don't want a mild, kind of tamed down cigar. So I found that when I have smoked our stuff that is older, it's just not really what I want it to be. I kind of miss what it was. So I'm just happy to smoke them when I am enjoying them the most, you know.
That sounds like me. I like to smoke everything and drink everything.
I find that when I do smoke something that's older that I go back to over time, I'm usually just kind of more disappointed that it's not the same as it was, you know. And it's kind of funny
depressing me right now. You're fucking depressing me right now, James.
You got to start.
You're fucking depressing.
You got to start smoking all that, Jerry.
You got a lot of work to do, dude. You need to go get started.
My man could smoke 3 cigars a day for like 2 years and still not be halfway through his collection.
Yeah.
Start smoking. Listen to that advice. Yeah.
And then on top of it, I have to still smoke all the new shit that comes out, because obviously we cover it on the media side. So it's like, how could I ever possibly get through this shit?
Yeah. but you know, it's like, it's kind of funny though, because I will say that, you know, even though I don't like aged cigars, I would say that the cigars that we do make are built for aging, right? Like, I think the profiles we make, you know, with the strength levels we have and things like that, that I do find that our cigars over time don't really mellow out all that much, which is kind of nice. So.
Got it. So if you age,
that's good.
Them,
that's, you know, good news. That's those. Good news. All right, you're giving me a little hope back. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Now, have you played with like aged tobacco for like the blend? Like, I know a lot of like before they even go to market, there'll be like some manufacturers that say, "Oh, this has 7 year aged tobacco," or is it strictly the young, you know, fresh leaf? That
no,
you
it
want?
Doesn't. It doesn't really. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to call bullshit, but. Let's just say that doesn't really happen a lot. Like, tobacco in the world of anywhere that cigars are produced is the number one commodity, and it's very difficult to store tobacco for that length of time and not have any issues with it. So most tobacco is gone through very quickly in terms of when it's used. So, no, but I mean... The answer to your question is no, I would not be interested because okay. It's not really, it's not my jam.
Now, do you guys have fields at the factory or you guys get your tobacco?
No, we don't grow anything, but we do all of our own processing and fermentation.
Sure. But it's all Nicaraguan for the most part, right?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, we do use a lot of, I mean, obviously in terms of wrapper leaf, we use wrapper from all over the world. But as far as fillers go, it's predominantly Nicaraguan. A little bit of Dominican. And then we also use, in certain cigars, we have started back in 2016 with the original Bishop's blend, where we started processing certain wrapper leaves into filler tobaccos and using those in the filler makeup as well. So.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I feel like I learn something every time I talk to one of you guys. Everybody just has different perspectives on things and it's just so, sometimes I'm like, oh, perfect. I totally agree with this guy. And then some people leave me like, you, smoke your fucking cigars, bro. Because you're not going to taste the same. And you're just like fucking depressed and whatever. It is what it is.
You're ready to go crack one of your boxes you had for a year or two, like real quick. Let me at least enjoy this while I can.
Yeah, let me go enjoy this real quick. I'm going to just smoke 20 cigars today.
Yeah.
What's the most cigars you ever smoked in a day, James?
I think it was like... 26 or 27.
Oh, that's a new record.
It was at one of the PCAs.
It's easy to do. I mean, that. That's where I broke my record, too.
Yeah, I mean, I get up early every day, so I'm up by, like, I'm smoking my first cigar by 5:30 a.m., so, you know, I get a kind of a head start throughout the day. But I would say my average, like, if I'm at home, I'll smoke probably, like, 9 cigars. If I'm at the factory, probably, like, 12 or 14.
So, basically, like Winston Churchill, always with a cigar in your hand.
I feel a little uncomfortable when I don't have a cigar in my hand.
It kind of makes sense to me. I get that. I smoke a lot, too.
And the great thing about living in Nicaragua is you can smoke everywhere, right? So that's sure.
It's the culture.
You know, that makes it a lot easier too, right? So like every restaurant you go to, I mean, I've smoked a cigar walking through the grocery store. So it's just
I wish
you just kind of always have a cigar with you. You know,
we get yelled at if we stand too close to the garage door at work.
Yeah, outside.
I wish I could just go through Wegman smoking a cigar. That'd be awesome. I'd love it.
Yeah, seriously.
Down to her, Nicaraguan edition.
Yeah. That'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah, I get a little uncomfortable when I like am traveling in the States, you know, and it's just like, okay, where can I smoke? Like, what, you know, it's such a pain.
What are the rules today? Because you never fucking know. It's probably every trip you're back, it's somewhere different. The rules are always different.
Can't smoke on airplanes anymore. That sucks. That's a bummer.
Yeah. Then, like, even with PCA, like you mentioned, like, oh, you're in the hallway, you can't smoke, but you're at the bar table, you can. Like, come on.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's why we're not allowed to smoke. I'm pretty sure that's why it's not at the Venetian or the Palazzo this year.
Yep.
Because the guys smoked way too many cigars. What do you think of that move going to New Orleans next year?
I think it's terrible.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It's terrible. I mean, I think... You know, I know a lot of people can be anti-PCA, but I'm definitely not. I mean, I would say I'm a big PCA supporter. We have a great show every year. It's you know, we do great business at the show. I think that, you know, the other side of that is, you know, they are kind of our voice and the people that are going to, you know, fight the FDA and do all of those things. So I tend to be a big supporter, but I think that this move to New Orleans is a huge mistake. I mean, I think, you know, what's great about Vegas is it's convenient, right? Like, I mean, you know, obviously the shift from the Sands makes it less convenient, but still, I mean, people can kind of make a vacation out of it. There's other things to do. There's a lot of places to smoke. So it has all those things going for it. Whereas, like, you know, I've done the show in New Orleans the last time it was there. And I mean, there's a citywide smoking ban. You know what I mean? Like, you can't smoke anywhere. There's nowhere to go when the show closes. You're having to take either an Uber or a rental car or whatever to get to and from the convention center. It's not convenient to anywhere, you know, in the actual city. So I think that it's going to kind of feel very inconvenient for a lot of retailers. It definitely feels very inconvenient for manufacturers because we haven't been told how long it's going to be in New Orleans, right? So I own this massive booth. And I have to ask myself, like, okay, are we shipping this thing from Las Vegas to New Orleans and storing it there? Are we, you know, or do we have to do something completely different just for the New Orleans show? So it just kind of, I don't know. For me, it just kind of messes things up, you know. I don't think that it needed to have a change, in my opinion.
What do you think about the time being changed from July to March?
You know, I think it's questionable. I know a lot of retailers wanted it changed. I understand why they wanted it changed. I think that my fear is that going into the show in March, you know, retailers are just coming out of winter, right? Which are notoriously bad months for sales, right? Sure. Like, so what does their budget look like in March compared to, you know, July where they've had the entire first half of the year and part of summer to really kind of do a lot of business. So that's kind of a concern for me is, you know, are retailers going to buy as much as they normally would buy? And is it a good time for them to get, you know, be receiving those like PCA exclusive items? Whereas, you know, summertime obviously is great. They're super busy. Everything moves quickly. So if we're, you know, we're one of the brands that doesn't ship our stuff late, right? Like if you're buying a PCA exclusive at our booth, you're going to have it by April. So
yeah.
What do the sales look like in April versus July? Like, are they going to be able to move through stuff as quick? So that's something I'm definitely concerned about. And, you know, also for us, it was a huge headache to kind of completely shift and readjust our production schedule to have all that stuff ready to go for March. You know, we had to basically have everything done before the end of last year to meet the March deadline. So that's definitely a different scenario from the manufacturing side as well. But I don't know, man, we'll see. I mean, I know the first year is going to be weird just because it's different, but hopefully, you know, it stays positive.
I can speak on like a podcast side and a media side of things. I live in fucking Buffalo, New York. Any chance to get the fuck away from here in the fucking middle of the winter is a fantastic opportunity. So I literally can't wait to go to Vegas in March. Just gives me an opportunity to get out of crap weather for a couple days and just enjoy, you know, probably mediocre temperatures of like 70. You know, right. Just normal weather for a couple days. It's a nice break. It just gives me something to look forward to. Obviously, as like a company, it's probably a million times different. Obviously, like you're talking logistics and stuff. Like, hey, are retailers going to be able to buy as much? You know, obviously, we know, like you said, it's notoriously slow in the winter, especially up here in the north. Nobody's buying cigars in, you know, January, February. Like, it's hard. And then obviously, you got to worry about shelf space in a store if you're a retailer. Like, shit's not moving. So if shit's not moving, there's no money coming in. And if you live in a high tax state like New York, fuck, man, I'm sitting on all this product from last year. And where the fuck am I going to put this stuff? Where am I going to come up with this money?
Well, and from a, you know, from a a brand owner manufacturer side as well, the thing that we're seeing too is, you know, on our side, normally, you know, mid-December, January, February are very slow sales months for us. What the show moving to March has done has made those months 10 times worse, right? Because now everybody's like, oh, well, I'm waiting for PCA. We're not buying anything because we're going to buy a PCA. So now what are notoriously bad months for, you know, the brands in terms of sales have become even worse. So, you know, that's one aspect that I didn't really think about ahead of time too much either, is that now, you know, those months are real bad because nobody's buying till March.
Do you think that pretty much getting kicked out of the Venetian, because obviously there were some issues last year, I'm sure the Palazzo wasn't very happy with everybody. It's a pretty smoky atmosphere. I mean, if you've ever been to the Palazzo or, you know, the Venetian for the show, you know how that casino is a absolute smoke cloud. There's no getting away from it.
It's an ashtray.
It's an ashtray. The whole place, there's people ashing on the floor. There's a lot of disrespect that goes on. So, I mean, as a casino owner, can you really blame them? Because, I mean, there's people that literally, I mean, these people are taking pictures in front of the signs that say no smoking. Like, they think it's cute. It's not cute.
You got to respect, like, the people's house.
Respect their house, and they'll respect you. You always want to be invited back to their house. You know, don't disrespect
them. Yeah, I mean, it's, I think the issue is, you know, I mean, a part of the issue is this is just going to get worse and worse, right? Like, so the only reason we're going to New Orleans is it's because it's one of the only convention centers they could find in the entire country that would allow us to smoke in the convention center.
Sure.
Right. So that's just going to keep getting worse and worse. And so if in that environment you're not respectful and you don't follow the rules and all of that, then, you know, we're just kind of, you know, we're
eating our own.
It sucks that we're proving the stereotype to be correct. Right?
Oh, man.
And that's definitely not what we want to do.
And you know, you never want it to be an all outdoors event, because that could just be a bad thing for bad weather.
Well, then on top of that, I mean, sometimes, I mean,
wants to be outside too all the time.
Yeah, well, depending on the weather.
Yeah.
You never know, man.
Even if it's so
hot. Who the hell wants to go to PCA if it was an all outdoor thing? That might, that would be horrible.
Yeah.
What if the weather, what if it's raining all day?
Or windy, all that
stuff. But I completely agree with you. I think that it sucks that we are having to move away from the sands. I mean, I think it was the ideal scenario for everybody. You could stay there. You could, I mean, everything's right there. So, yeah, to see that and to see the way that people kind of treated everything, it was, let's just say I was not surprised in the least when we were told we had to move.
Yeah. Now, I mean, also, you even mentioned, like, I didn't even think of this because you said you have stuff planned even all the way out to 2026. Having to move up production automatically sounds like a giant pain in the ass. Now, add in the fact that, like, you don't even know where it could be. Like you said, like, only 1 year's been announced with New Orleans. Like, for all you know, they could tell you, hey, next year we're doing it in Dallas or some shit like that.
It's in Juneau, Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
something crazy.
Well, is there anything for upcoming PCA that you, besides your two releases, anything else that you're excited for?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's, like I said, I enjoy the show. Like, I enjoy being there. I like it because I get to see, you know, a lot of retailers that I wouldn't necessarily see on the road. You know, even though I do get out there quite a bit, it's still, you know, you're never going to see everybody. So I love catching up with all those guys. I love, you know, catching up with the other people I know in the industry. So for me overall, I'm usually pretty excited about the show. I just enjoy being there and hanging out and seeing people. So it's just kind of, I think the whole vibe for me, I enjoy and get excited about.
I'll be excited. It's my first PCA, so I'll be excited to see you there and meet you there as well in person.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I do get a little, I will say this, like, it's a little shocking, like, to look at what the trade show floor was, say, like, you know, even 6 years ago. And then you look at the map today at how small it is comparatively. And it's a little disconcerting, you know, to see like how much the show has scaled back over the years. I'm curious to see how it feels this time around, because when you look at the footprint, it feels a little bit like,
Do you think that's because of like the generals buying up some of these more boutique-y brands? Like obviously last year, you know, Room 101 got bought, and you know, that was their way of being back at the show. Like, you see, do you think that's because of like more brands being under one umbrella?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's part of it, but I think it's also, it's tough, man. Like, this is a tough industry. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, like, you know, it's an expensive industry. Let's put it that way. And the PCA is not cheap, right? So if you're not doing well at the show, if you're not getting traction, you're not selling a shitload of cigars, then it's hard to be there. It's hard to justify it. So I think the reality is that, like, you know, attendance for the show, has it gone down? Yes. But has the quality of the people going to the show gone up? Definitely. So, like, from a retailer standpoint, you know, we're getting much better quality retailers than we were, say, 6 years ago, right? So these guys are not tire kickers. They're there to do business, you know. And so I think, but they're very focused, right? On, they know what they want. They know where they're going. And so I think a lot of brands, especially smaller brands, just kind of get lost in the hustle. And it's hard to justify being a PCA year after year after year if you're not making money, right? Because it's, like I said, it's insanely expensive to be there. So I think a lot of it has to do with PCA constantly increasing prices. I mean, that's the thing, too, is every year it's up, it's up, it's up. So it just kind of weeds people out eventually.
So we talked to a couple smaller little retailers, or not retailers, but companies. And, you know, we had a conversation with one of them last year. I won't say who they are, but they're like, man, we're not really having a great show right now. And this fucking booth was not fucking cheap. This could be very disastrous for us. So I kind of understand what you're saying when it comes to like having a spot on that floor is not cheap. So you want people there. You want these people, you know, but here's the thing. I saw the same brand. They were sitting around fucking smoking cigars in a circle, and you know, you'd walk up to ask a question, and like it almost seemed like they couldn't be bothered. And that, I feel like, could be a even more like a bigger issue. You know,
Be
a little more personable, man. I feel like it's you know, if you're not there and you're not fucking there to hustle, then why fucking go?
Yeah, for sure.
Because you know, there's guys that go just to meet guys like you. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, don't blow a guy off. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, I've had a legacy brand. You know, I tried to meet the guy who runs the thing. Obviously, we're not here to bash anybody, but, you know, the guy was just like, yeah, I don't have time for you, bro. Sorry. And it's just like, okay, just remember, at the end of the day, if we don't buy your shit, you know, we're the ones that make your company successful as a consumer. And, you know, I just feel like some brands leave a bad taste in your mouth, and then some you're just like, man, I don't even really know this brand, but I really like the guy in charge of it. This guy is super cool, and I'm going to fucking smoke his shit just because that guy gave us the time of day.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I think, you know, going back to the whole footprint thing, I think what we have seen a lot of is, you know, the large, you know, legacy style brands have kind of realized that they don't need 60 booths, right, to make an impression. So those guys have scaled back a lot. And I think that really has a lot to do with kind of the shrinking of the show floor size as well.
Well, you see a lot of those big brands, some of them don't even fucking come anymore.
Yeah, I think it was like big news. I think Drew Estate's coming back for this one.
They were there last year.
Yeah.
They were there last year.
I don't know. They weren't under that umbrella. They were under their like brokerage thing or some weird thing. I remember because like I remember reading the article about it. But like
Davidoff doesn't even come. It's just like, okay, cool. But, you know, it's strange, you know. And I feel like when them guys don't show up and guys like you come and you guys are pushing out great products and you guys are fucking personable and you're willing to take the time to talk to these people and make relationships and it goes so much farther. And like you said, you're spot on. You get some of these guys, they know, hey, I really don't need your business. I'm going to fucking sell all my shit. All my limiteds are going to go. I don't need you. And they act like that, some of them. It's a bad, right. It's a bad look.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the reality is, you know, larger brands can say what they want to say, whatever their reason is for not going to the PCA or whatever. The reality is if they were killing it at the show, they'd be at the show. You know what I mean? But they're not, because, you know, they're just not getting the traction that they used to, you know, and it's just, I think it's just the nature of the industry and the way that it's headed, you know, and especially if you're going to offer the same show deals, whether people go to the show or not go to the show or whatever, then it's just kind of like, okay, well, you know, why do I need to spend my time as a retailer setting a meeting with you if when I get back home to my shop, I can just call you up and place the same exact order, you know what I mean? So I think that certain brands just kind of lost traction over the years, you know?
Who has the biggest Rolex? Who has the nicest suit?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's kind of how it is with some of these brands. It's just like a, I don't know, it's like a fashion show. It's crazy, but whatever. It is what it is.
Now, I had another question here. So, all right, you've obviously, you know, from what I've gathered, you like to do your own thing and don't want to make it unless it's something you believe in. Right now, it seems like all the rage is there's various like brands collabing, like you go to someone's factory, they go to your factory and make something out of your stuff. Is that something you would ever do?
I mean, I feel like if it was the right project, yeah. I don't know, man. My thing is I'm just not really super tight with anybody in the industry. I just kind of stay in my lane and do my thing. Like, I'm, you know, I know people, but I'm not like, I don't know. We're not like hanging out or whatever, you know, outside of business. So, but yeah, I mean, if it was the right person and the right project, I would be open to it. You know, you never know.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Well, listen, James, we've had you for an hour and 23 minutes so far, man. I just want to say we appreciate you coming on, hanging out, talking Black Label Trading Company, just telling us a little about the company, talking about the blends, talking about the brand. We really appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Is there anything you want to say to our listeners that are listening to the show? Anything you want them to know?
You know, I would just say, like, you know, what's important for brands like mine is, you know, to just get out there and try new stuff. And, you know, like you were talking about, like, you just go through stuff, try it a few times before you decide whether you like it or don't like it. But, you know, just open your eyes to something new, something different, and experiment as much as you can and, you know, find something you love to smoke.
Any social media handles you want to plug?
Yeah, got to plug it all.
Yeah, man. I mean, so Black Label Trading Company on Instagram, Blackwork Studios on Instagram. You know, definitely check out our pages. That's where we keep all of our most up-to-date information. Also our website, OvejaNegraCigars.com. That's where we have all of our events posted, our retailer lists. You know, we have a news section as well. That'll have all of our press releases for new products. So check that out as well.
All right, man. Hey, I just want to say I appreciate all the time. I'm sure I could speak for these two guys as well.
Pleasure having you.
Go try the products, man. These guys put out some good stuff. The cigar was an absolute banger. I smoked this thing down to the nub.
Gio's on cigar number two.
Yeah, I'm on my second morphine.
There you go.
That doesn't happen often.
Says a lot.
I think that's...
Yeah, it says a lot.
What? Did we say this was 107 or 106?
106.
I think that's only happened like
107.
Three times.
107.
Yeah. Three times I've had to smoke two cigars for it. So props to you, my friend.
All right, James. Well,
I appreciate it, guys.
We appreciate the time, man, and we look forward to seeing you at the show. What booth are you at?
I have no idea the number.
Okay. Some guys know the number.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Then they just fucking start chanting the 5-digit number that no one's going to remember. But
we'll find you there.
Yeah. We'll see you at the show, and we appreciate the time, man.
And lastly, if you don't mind, after this ends, just leave your desktop or laptop open just for like a minute or two to finish uploading everything.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right, man. You. We appreciate the time. Guys. We'll talk to you soon.
See
you.
Have a good night.
See you, brother.
Thanks.
All right, guys. James Brown from Black Label Trading Company, Aveja Negra Cigars. Dude, the cigar was a banger, dude. I hate to ask, Gio, did you bring an extra?
I got one more for you, bud.
My man. I think I'm going to just hop right back on the train. Give me your best. Give me your best to a fucking throw.
You know what? Second Black Label Trading Company cigar that we've done on the show, and we've done the other one pretty recent. This one, like, I know that we didn't give the other one a bad score. This one just blew that one out of the water.
I think maybe we had some storage issues, because obviously I had some cracking issues with the first one, but obviously that's not that big of a deal. It happens, dude. I mean,
they're Leafs.
We also didn't let them rest. I mean, we've had these cigars for over a month, and Gio put them away in his fancy-dancy coolador for a little time to rest. So, way better smoking experience. So, actually, this is the second time with Black Label Trading Company that I have smoked a second cigar during the show.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. The other royalty.
Yeah. Very, man, I don't know how to describe it, but that guy knows some way to just make his cigar's flavor profile stand out.
Maybe it's because he doesn't let them rest, like you said.
Could be.
Fucking smoke your cigars, apparently. I'm an idiot, and I just let them rest forever. Never smoke them.
Just start digging, man. Just start digging.
Maybe that's what happened. Those royalties, you know, because we got them from a shop that might have had them for a minute.
That being said, Mr. Steen, what are we getting into here, bud?
All right, and now it's time for Patrol Gone Wild, brought to you by Dunbarton Tobacco and Trust, makers of such fine cigars such as Mi Querida, Sin Compromiso, Sober Mesa, and many others. Here we go.
Patrol Gone Wild. We're doing it big.
All right. I'll start things off. We have news out of California. So we have a California library shuts down over drug use and public sex between the bookshelves. So this is coming right after Valentine's Day. So a couple people were definitely getting it on with their significant other at this library. And the library has checked out of business. So this is going out of Contra Costa County Library, Antonock Branch. So this is right outside of Oakland. They have decided to shut their doors following rampant months of drug use, robberies, and even public sex between the bookshelves. Those bookshelves have seen better days.
Good Lord.
A lot of dirty homeless people having sex.
Ugh. What is happening in these towns? California, drugs, sex. It's like
rock and roll.
It's rock and roll, man. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like we just traveled back in time, and then this is just now normal behavior in these major states.
I'm very curious, like, how bad was it though in like the 80s, where 70s, like and you know, early 90s, that they just didn't have social media and all that shit to document it, and we never heard about it.
Oh, it was probably way worse. I guarantee it was way worse back then. Cuz
like, even remember we were talking with Aaron from Smoke Wagon, he's like, man, social media ruined it. Bars used to be way more fun.
He was spot on, man. Can you imagine just being able to go out to the bar and not have no fear? I mean, if you were on camera from the bar footage, it was in like 480p. I mean,
they couldn't tell it was you.
Yeah, it was like, that ain't me. So that's pixelated. A fucking robot.
All right. Well,
that's a Sega Genesis character. What are you talking about?
I guess this library had tons of fun. They do want to reopen eventually. They just want to make it safer for their patrons. The community is very upset. All the kids, family, tons of bad behavior, like talking too loud, failure to return books on time, a ton of vandalism, a ton of thefts. People are out there stealing library books, I guess.
You never forgot to return a library book for 100 years.
I've also never smoked crack or had sex in the library as well. I'm not going to put those on my to-do list.
I mean, I feel like a college library has definitely seen its fair share of library sex, but
or definitely some weird shit.
That's college libraries. Yeah, that's true. But you know,
Caleb, shut the fuck up.
Don't judge me.
Might be a story for another day. But they do
after her.
They do want to try to reopen this. They're thinking they're gonna have to upgrade security, hire a couple full time security officers for even at nighttime. They do apologize to the patrons and the staff. They are unclear when this library will reopen. So, terrible story out of California, I guess.
Go read a book, you nerd.
I think all those people doing sex and drugs need to read more books.
I agree. All right, I got.
I think the Kama Sutra is still available for rent.
If you think the Kama Sutra is still in that library, that was the first book stolen.
That's what everyone was practicing in the bookshelf aisles.
Look at this book. We should try this right here.
Right here, right now, baby. Let's get it on.
Where else would you rather be?
Nonfiction, baby. All right, listen, I got one out of Florida. This is from September. I came across this story, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? This is a Florida man arrested while attempting to run across the Atlantic Ocean in a giant hamster wheel. Yes, you heard that correct. Obviously, there's a little thumbnail. This is an actual picture from the sheriff's office in Florida.
That is awesome.
This man got caught 70 miles off the coast of Georgia. So he got 70 miles out on this fucking crazy contraption that he made. But let me get a little into the details of this. A Florida man, he was an ultra marathon runner. He was arrested by the Coast Guard officials while attempting to cross the Atlantic Ocean to London in a human-sized hamster wheel. First things first, this contraption looks very well thought out. You can't tell me otherwise. What do you think, G?
Yeah, so, all right, just you told me he's an ultra marathon runner, so I already know he's fucking insane. So for those who don't know what ultra marathon runners are, that's like the David Goggins and Cameron Hayes, like them dudes that just somehow have their extreme mental will to run until they have blisters on their feet bleeding and then still keep going.
Yeah.
So I already, the minute you said that, I was like, oh, this guy's a fucking nut job.
So this dude's name is Reza Bellucci. He was, again, rescued 70 miles off the coast of Tybee Island, Georgia, on August 26th in the midst of preparations for Hurricane Franklin. So there was a hurricane coming, and this guy was still like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to try and get to London in this thing. This will be quite the story. Apparently, he was armed with a 12-inch knife, and he was going to just commit suicide when they tried to actually rescue this guy. So he was really like, don't ruin this for me. I'm going to do it. He actually got charged with some federal shit. I'm going to look up the actual charge. But what do you guys think about that?
I just want to know, did he have like a fishing pole to go fishing when he needed to settle down and eat? Or like, did he pack food, water? Because if you're going to plan like a 1,000-mile journey from America to London, you need to have food and water. So, like, what was his plan for that? That's what I'm concerned about.
So, apparently, this guy has actually attempted this voyage three times. He tried this in 2014, 2016, and 2021 as well. This is a direct quote from him. I'll never give up on my dream. They stopped me four or five times, but I'll never give up, he told the outlet. So, this dude is never going to stop. I'm sure he's going to give this another whirl. My thing is, do you think that they actually, like, confiscated this giant hamster wheel?
I mean, I don't know what the, like, first off, what I don't understand is why he started in Georgia.
I have no idea. Maybe that's where he ended up.
Yeah, he should have started off in like New York.
It said Florida man. But Bellucci was finally brought ashore on September 1st. He now faces federal charges of obstruction of a boarding and violation of captain of the port order.
Maritime law, so that's all.
I have no idea how that works. Obviously, I'm a local law enforcement officer here, but I see the word fed, and I know this guy's probably going to get in some trouble.
It's just going to be a nasty fine. Like, he didn't hurt anybody. But the problem is like,
you could see this as maybe like a mental disorder. Well, like, hey, there's obviously something wrong with this guy. He's trying to run across the Atlantic Ocean. And how long do you, this is, I'm getting sidetracked here because I'm just envisioning you are 70 miles off the coast.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, I'm not sure if I understand tides and currents. Doesn't it, what the flow of tide go downward? Like, so, like,
I gotta say, dude, I'm not like a.
What would, so, is this
who,
guy
who would even study this?
Some
like marine human,
marine bio, tides, but I don't know what the fuck the people who study the tides are.
Wouldn't the waves push you back in? Like, can you run against the waves?
Well, there's rogue waves, yeah, but that here's are the 30 feet.
But then on top of that, I mean, you see people get sucked out to the ocean all the time.
I'd rather get sucked out sometimes than, you know,
sucked in,
sucked off.
Sucked off would be nice.
But like I think the biggest issue is like there's a hurricane coming and like you've got now Coast Guard officials that have to risk their lives to, you know, save this idiot for not going through the proper channel. Because
70 miles to a helicopter really ain't shit. I'm going to tell you that right now. So I'm sure they just went out there and they were like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Tell that to Kobe Bryant.
Oh,
too soon.
But that's my point. A small helicopter trip, you don't know how that's going to go. That's why I totally understand why they'd be pissed off.
So my first thing would be, like, I think giant hamster wheel, guys trying to go across the Atlantic Ocean to London in a hamster wheel. The first thing is like, oh my God, he's going to get eaten by a shark. And then you look at this thing and you're like, a shark could never eat this thing.
See,
even if this thing flipped, it would still float. I think this thing's built better than a boat.
Hold on. Where would this guy sleep? Did he have a hammock?
He probably did.
My guess is he's got some stuff inside there to like cover himself from the sun and all that. Like some form, he's probably calculated how much food he might need.
This guy watched Castaway a few too many times. I'm sure he had a fucking Wilson ball too.
Like what I want to know though is like, what does he do if like, all right, you can't do this consistently 1,000 miles through against the wave, like the resistance from the wave, like. You get a 50-foot wave, like we all saw Wolf of Wall Street, you know, that thing toppled the fucking yacht.
I think that they should have actually supported this goal and almost, like...
Let him go,
but also, like, keep an eye on him. I mean, Amelia Earhart couldn't do it in an airplane. If this guy could get across in a hamster wheel, this would be one of the greatest feats of all time. This is a once-in-a-lifetime, could-never-be-repeated...
Well,
attempt.
Have him do the Nick Walenda shit, but like start it like, all right, well, go London to New York. So at least, you know, you got some waves on your side. Like they can somehow monitor, send some GPS like, ah, fuck, this guy's fucking weird. We got to go get him. Or like, you never know. He fucking has to Jonah the whale and the whale this shit like a fucking giant.
Reza Bellucci, I just want to say from the boys at Down to Herf, I don't know if I could speak for these two, but I fucking salute you. And I think an attempt in 2024.
I think you need
is
to
right up your alley.
Maybe leave from Canada or something closer. Maybe set your goal a little shorter.
Because guess like, what?
Try the English, go somewhere where they just don't give a shit about you.
Try the English Channel first. It's a lot smaller than the whole Atlantic Ocean.
Go from Maine to London.
Yeah,
like be I a think good that, one. Like, guess what? No one else is going to try this. Once you do it, you won.
Or like, why don't you just like?
You think he'll ever succeed?
No, he should come here to Buffalo, and he should go Buffalo to Detroit, right across Lake Erie. That's a lot simpler.
What's the mileage on that through Lake Erie?
I'll look it up while we go on a geo story.
Yeah, but you can't like calculate the land though.
It's gotta be
it's gotta be the
nautical
water mile. Only.
Yeah,
nautical.
He might have done it.
Yeah,
I'll look it up while we get to geo story.
All right, guys, I got an interesting one here. This isn't our average police contact, if you will, but we've all had. Some response to some kind of wild animal. And in Florida, sometimes they get calls for a, you know, loose gator. And this clip was actually from today, February 19th, at the time of the recording. 8-foot gator KOs animal control worker. So they got this gator, like, essentially hogtied. And, like, apparently there's something you're supposed to do to, like, hit the snout of the gator to, like, kind of immobilize him for a minute so you can transport it. Well, it looked like this guy was just kind of being a dick to the alligator, and I didn't get the full clip of it, but I did send you it. Wait till you see the gator gets his revenge.
All right, let's look at this.
Be mindful of the other law enforcement officials there, too.
Ooh, oh, shit. Dude, they got that thing hogtied, bro. But
and that dude is out.
Bro, he absolutely... Oh, the slow-mo. Oh, fuck, bro.
I love the black dude in the background just laughing.
Bro, that dude just got absolutely KO'd by the snout of this alligator, which is completely hogtied, immobilized. Shouldn't be able to do what it did, but it just absolutely knocked the fucking shit out.
You hit me in my nose, I hit you in yours.
You got knocked the fuck out.
You're definitely going to be eating some alligator later because that alligator is going to be killed and fried up.
But I don't know, bro.
I'm that dude in the back that's like 6 feet away from this thing because fuck that. And if I see that dude get KO'd, I'm like, oh.
You see the clips of like the animal handlers and stuff. They're like, here, let me bring this baby alligator out with the electrical tape around its mouth. These people are terrified of these things. You couldn't catch me near that thing. I would never. 8-foot fucking gator? Are you out of your fucking mind?
Nope. And from Buffalo to Detroit over water, it's over 250 miles.
So he's fucking almost halfway there.
That's almost reasonable for that guy.
Not,
he could do it.
No, I mean, not really 125, but okay. I mean, like, if he doubled up, he was halfway there.
Yeah, he could do it.
I think that would be easier.
Might take about a week.
Fresh water.
Yeah. Less less chance of running into like a fucking 50-foot wave.
Or a hurricane.
Yeah. Might get some lake effect snow.
He could do it.
Caught in a blizzard.
I got faith in him.
All right.
Do you think would be harder to hamster wheel through? A lake effect snowstorm or a hurricane?
Hurricane.
I'm going to go with the blizzard, dude. That's just got to be freezing cold.
Mm.
The cold is what's going to kill you.
That's what'll get you.
I saw Titanic, dude. It wasn't that they were in the water that they died. It was that the water was cold.
Get you every single time.
That being said, Caleb.
All right. Oh, yeah. Before we get to the news.
Yeah.
One last thing here. Let me just.
Yeah. This segment was brought to you by Dunbarton Tobacco and Trust.
Yeah. Tune in next week for another Patrol Gone Wild segment brought to you by Dunbarton Tobacco and Trust. Now time for news with Caleb.
The news with our boy, Caleb.
Hey, we're going to start things off with a company that you guys know and love. Big friends of the show. We got Pestaña, Fosforo, increasing prices as of 3/1/2024. So, is it Prospect Inc.? How do you say it?
Papiche.
Papiche Inc., the distribution company for Choji, Fosforo, Pestaña, and a couple others, they announced that they are going to increase prices effective March 1st. So price increase will be between 6 and 20%. It's going to apply to all regular production Pestaña SKUs. And the
Pestaña.
Pestaña. They're going to be based on price increases from Fabrica de Tabacos Nicas Mineiro S.A., the factory that produces all its cigars. What do we got here? And for Fosforo, about 5% increase for all cigars made from Tabacalera Cervecis de Esteli. So there's another company to add to the list for increasing prices for 2024.
Hustling ain't cheap.
Hustling is not cheap. Support our boy. Support Cigar Hustler.
Yeah, Phil's got to keep getting his new masks.
those masks aren't cheap.
And make sure you guys are listening to a Cigar Hustler podcast network because we fucking love those guys.
Yeah,
those are our people.
Palmer's got to renew his Reverend certificate too.
All right. Up next for our second news story of the day, we have Viaje, the Super Shot, returning this month. So the Shotgun Shells line are due to come out actually today, the 19th. So perfect. It's based on their 2023 release with the 10-gauge and 12-gauge versions returning. But there is not going to be a Buckshot version. So they're not going to use the Mexican San Andreas wrapper on here. So. You could have the Viaje Supershot 10-gauge. It's a 3.5 by 54, $7.60 a piece, or a box of 25 for $190. And then you're going to have the 12-gauge, which is a 3.25 by 52, or $720 for a single, and $180 for a box of 20. For a box of 25, $180. So the production numbers and factory producing the cigars has not been disclosed. So it'll be out real soon. This has been going on since 2012, where they've done the Supershot. So be on the lookout for that from Viaje.
Fun line. Definitely. Dr. Farkas.
Dr. Farkas.
Dr. Andrew.
Andre.
All right. And lastly, a little whiskey news. We have Cone Q Ridge is opening a new distillery in June of 2024. So Cone Q Ridge Brands has been a long source whiskey for Clyde Mays, something we've done very early on the show but haven't done recently. So this is going to be based out of Troy, Alabama. So there's something for you guys. Alabama, Clyde Mays, moonshining out there. It's 20 miles north from where Clyde Mays originally made his first moonshine in the 1950s. It is going to be one of the largest distilleries in Alabama. It's going to be bottled on site. Clyde Mays is actually going to be bottled on site there at Cone Q Ridge. They're going to have a 24-inch column still, which will produce 600,000 gallons of whiskey a year. A warehouse for a capacity of 9,000 barrels.
Capacity?
Capacity of 9,000 barrels.
Capacity. What the fuck?
I've been drinking.
Yeah, clearly.
There's gonna be,
and smoking.
There's going to be tasting rooms, a retail shop, and food trucks, and tours are going to be offered for $20 to $45.
Perfect.
So if you're in Alabama looking for something to do, want to check out some Clyde Mays, well, it's going to be right there at Cone Q Ridge.
All right, cool, man. Caleb. Cigar review time, brother.
All right, I'm done.
How did we do?
I think we did pretty good. Big improvement from the last cigar that we did from Black Label, the Royalty. So we did the Morphine today. Appearance, I really like the double label on this thing. As always, all the artwork that James does, it's stellar. It stands out. It pops. Giving it a 9. Burn, no issues. Didn't really like this at all. Didn't even have any flakes or anything on me throughout the whole show. So 9 there. Construction, really held up. The ash stayed very white the whole time. Nice deck of dimes. You really had to just tap that ash to get it off. 9.5. Draw with the shape of the cigar. The box press and the torpedo. Had to do a V-cut there because it fit my mouth just right. Gave it a 9. No issues there as well. And enjoyment, we had James Brown on himself. Gave it a 9. So overall, a 45.5 from me, which is a 91. I got notes. Chocolate pre-light. And then halfway through, the pepper started to really intensify and kick in. And then it even like intensified even more with some more pepper and more spice in the last third. Took the cigar down to the nub. Very good cigar.
All right, man. Black Label Trading Company Morphine. The appearance, I gave it an 8.5. I really like the artwork on it. I think it's pretty cool stuff. The band came off pretty easy, too. That was one of the notes I had. The burn, I gave it a 9. I had no issues with the burn. The construction, no issues with construction. I gave that a 9. The draw, great smoke output. Definitely drew when I wanted it to. Gave that a 9 as well. And obviously having James Brown on with us today, I gave it a 9.5. I feel like he gave me a different perspective from, you know, a smaller company in the industry. And, you know, just a guy that, you know, he's going to do what he wants to do. And it doesn't really matter what anybody thinks. They're just going to keep grinding away in Nicaragua and keep putting out great products, you know, develop that cult following that Black Label Trading Company has done. And, you know, just keep doing what they do. Some notes I got on the cigar. I did get like that dark chocolate taste to it. Some unique flavors on this tobacco, and I'm not really sure. I couldn't really put my nose or palate to it. But the retrohale on this cigar, not a really intense peppery flavor. So, I mean, it was pretty mild in my opinion as far as the retrohale. But I gave this cigar a 46, bringing me to a 92. I really like this cigar. I like this cigar enough that during the show I had to relight and have another one. So looking forward to getting into the second one and enjoying it for a second time. Gio, what'd you think?
Yeah, the Morphine. I got to say, I'm a really, really big fan of this cigar. It's not often you see me light up a second one. I'm glad I had the option to do so. I mean, appearance, I'm going to give this thing a 9. So there's some things I want to talk about specifically about this. One, you got a box press torpedo and a short style, which was very interesting. It's, you know, advertises a Robusto size, so I liked that. And that faint, like, you won't be able to really see it because of the lighting here, but if you guys really look at the cigar, it's a barber pole. Like, there's different shades of tobacco on it. And I think that is kind of cool in the fact that you were able to put that in there. So, I don't know. Did you not see that?
I am obviously not seeing that. I'm pretty sure he said it was just a Mexican San Andreas.
No, there's two different shades on my wrapper here. Like,
okay. All right. Maybe for you.
But
I don't know. I don't see it, but
I'll show you after this here. Construction. Skipped burn. Burn. I'm going to give this thing a 9. I mean, I liked it so much. I smoked it twice. I didn't have any issues. Like, you guys know I'm a clicker when it comes to that lighter if it need be, so didn't hear a lot of that, which is a good sign. Construction, I'm right there with you guys. I had no issues with this, you know. Don't have a single flake on me. Ashed when I wanted it, you know. I can't say enough good things about, you know, this particular LE here. And draw, IV cut, I think we all did. Now, great, great draw, you know. No issues. We've all touched on the smoke output on that. I don't want to be redundant in saying it. I'm right there with you, Jer. I really enjoyed this, you know, conversation we had with James. You know, this one really got into the geeky side of the cigars, and we don't always do that. And we talked about things that, we don't really get into. It was a really, like, different tone of conversation that we had, and I enjoyed it, especially getting down to the nitty-gritty.
For sure. I enjoyed it.
That gave me 9s all across the board, and that's going to be real simple. It gave it to a 45 for a 90.
Caleb, how did we do?
All right. This should be an easy one. Just divide it by 3, and we have an overall score of 91. Very easy. Yeah, so much better than the last one we had. Not that there's anything really wrong with the last one, but really enjoyed the Morphine a lot more.
I think that's fair. That being said, Mr. Steen, closing notes to the episode, sir.
All right, guys, just make sure you're following James and Black Label Trading Company on all their social medias. But most importantly, make sure you're following ours. We have the YouTube, the Facebook, the Instagram, and we have the Patreon, patreon.com/downtoearthpodcast. So make sure you're following everything. And there's the TikTok, too. We really appreciate all the likes, the views, the comments. Keep it up. We love you guys. Grower gang.
And if you're listening to us audio only, make sure you're checking that out on a Cigar Hustler Podcast Network, the number one cigar network on Podbean. Go check out their show as well. We love them, guys. We love Boots. We love Phil. We love the king himself, Mike. Keep checking us both out. Keep staying in touch. Keep up the comments. And Gio, I think I touched everything. What do you think?
I think you said it all. Jerry, start smoking your cigars. Peace.
Peace out, guys. Appreciate y'all. All right. The Down to Herb Podcast, its owners and sponsors take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the talk show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of Mike and Mike Productions or the podcast providers, and opinions between talk show hosts may differ. It's not our intention to libel, incite, or hurt anyone's feelings. We invite you to write the show's host, Jerry Lewandowski, with any feedback or suggestions you have for their show. These broadcasts are presented and made public as entertainment in the hopes that they will be entertaining to the audience.